But I hope I don't get myself stuck in these handcuffs that Les Larson let me borrow, because they're real ones. And they're not the little plastic ones that your kids play with. So I'm not going to do this one. Because knowing me, I'll probably not be able to figure out the key, and I'll have to stand here the whole time like this. So. Let's go ahead and pray. Sharon, would you pray? It's not in there. Get out. It's not in there. Sorry. It's in that black bag right there. This is top secret information here. Okay.
Our God and Father in heaven, thank you so much that we have the opportunity to come together as Christian women to study, to learn more about your word, to practice imitating Christ. Through the practice of imitating Christ, we grow our faith and we become better reflections and better able to go out into the world and teach others about Christ. God, we welcome opportunities like this where we can assemble with many other Christians from different backgrounds and glean from their experience and their wisdom and make ourselves stronger women, stronger examples, and stronger workers in the kingdom. God, thank you so much, especially today, for Sherry Hostetter, for the opportunity that we have to learn from you through her, because she has got an amazing perspective on being a Christian woman, dying to self and serving you solely. God, we thank you for that opportunity. And again, thank you for this marvelous family camp and for the years of wisdom assembled in this tent right this minute. Help us to leave this opportunity stronger and encouraged and, God, just ready to take on the world. For all these things, we thank you. For your son, we thank you. For loving us, we thank you. And it's in Jesus' name that we pray. Amen.
Okay. Mr. Wilson told me that I could talk about anything that I wanted to. So coming from Africa, Ghana, which used to be called Slave Coast, all along West Africa, I thought I'd talk about slavery. And because we are far removed from slavery here, it doesn't often have an impact in our mind on what it means to be a slave. But from the ancient times, we see slavery all the way back in Genesis 12, when Abram took the persons which he had acquired in Haran and set out for Canaan. Those were his people. They didn't have a choice if they wanted to go with him to Canaan or not. They were his. He took them. And then we see also in Genesis the famous slavery story of Joseph and how against his will he was sold and taken to Egypt, and how God used that slavery to benefit the whole Israelite nation. In the New Testament, in Acts chapter 17, we read the account of Israel's slavery, how they were subject to their masters. In Ghana, we have a history of slave trade all along the coast. Sharon, have you been to the slave castle? You've been to the slave castle? We've seen the slave castles in Ghana. They stand there to this day. A few years ago, we went to slave castle, and they were excavating down in the dungeon because they were trying to renovate the place. And as they were digging out the debris that had accumulated over the years, they found human bones. And this person had died in the dungeon, and they had never removed the body for burial. The body had just decayed and had been buried among all the other debris that was there in that dungeon. So slavery, historically, in Ghana, is something that we face. We can see evidence of it. In today, still in Ghana, slavery exists. They have tried to abolish a system called the Trikosi system, where girls are sold to the fetish priest for sexual relationships by their families so that they get a blessing from that idol. so that they get benefit for themselves. We also just recently had a whole bunch of newspaper articles about kids who were sold to fishermen. And these kids would dive down into the rivers and untangle nets so that the fishermen could have more productive fishing excavations. So they had to untangle the nets, and it was a very dangerous job because sometimes these little kids' feet would get tangled in the nets and they couldn't come up. They were stuck. And so there was a big, you know, newspaper article about these kids, and a group came in and bought these kids off of the fishermen and gave them back to their parents. And, well, the parents just saw that as an opportunity for making more money, and so they would continue the cycle of reselling their children for the fishermen to use them. We have a young lady in our congregation who was sold to a man basically against her will. He gave the parents a couple of cows, a few sheep, and she was his. And he beat her and busted her teeth out and, you know, whatever he wanted to do to her. And then when he got tired of her, he sent her away and got another wife. So that's another type of slavery that we see present in Ghana in the year 2009. My personal history, my great-great-grandma's parents had a plantation operated by slaves. They, you know, harvested things. And anybody else share that history with me? Great-great-grandparents? Slavers? Yeah? So back east, you know, people who carried that same name, who were darker skinned, were probably slaves of someone who had owned them, you know, who had owned their great-great-grandfathers. So that's in my history, personal history. Along the eastern seaboard, there are Civil War battlefields all along, you know, the whole eastern seaboard. Any ever visited those? You know, these are physical reminders to us of a terrible blight on history where man was oppressing man based upon skin color or sexual gender or whatever. So, you know, when we see the history of Israel and we see their slavery, it's easy for us, isolated here in the West, who have never had that, you know, history, to, you know, think, okay, slavery, so what? You know, it's not such a terrible thing, or it doesn't affect me. This is not something that is relevant to my life today. But Paul talks about slavery in the New Testament, and I think, you know, God allows things to happen in history to give us a physical picture of things that are a spiritual reality, so that we can understand God more and understand the heavenly things more. I really was talking to Jane earlier about Mr. Hoffman's lesson last night. And, yeah, the husband-wife relationship is a relationship that God has placed on earth to help us know the intimacy that he wishes for us to have with him, the spiritual relationship of a loving husband to his bride. Let's look in the book of Galatians. And I'm going to tie this all into something that is dealing with we women eventually. We'll come around to it. Let's look in the book of Galatians. I would appreciate if someone would read Galatians 2, verse 4 to me. Galatians 2, verse 4. Anybody?
But it was because of the false brethren who had sneaked in to quiet our liberty, which we have in Christ Jesus, in order to bring us into bondage.
False brethren in the church are constantly trying to wreak havoc in the church by putting laws on people, do this, don't do that. And we need to realize the freedom, the liberty that we have been given in Christ. We are free. He goes on to say in chapter 4, we're going to do a lot of reading, so if we can read through this quickly, whoever finds it first, go for it. Chapter 4, verse 3. Okay, here's another verse about bondage. Children are slaves. They are told to sit here, go there, eat this, wear that, get a bath, go to sleep. They're slaves of their parents, those who are over them. And verse 9 of the same chapter.
And now that you have come to know God, or rather to be known by God, how is it that you turn back again to the meek and worthless elemental things to which you desire to be enslaved all over again?
Okay, Paul's bringing the Galatians back to the picture that we do not need to be slaves to our flesh, to the things that we put behind us. We need to not be enslaved to the weak and worthless things, is what he calls them. In verse 1 of chapter 5.
It was for freedom that Christ set us free. Therefore, keep standing firm and do not be subject again to a yoke of slavery.
Okay, so all these verses, just in the book of Galatians, there are more that Paul is trying to remind the church in Galatia that they're free. They're not slaves anymore. The early church was made up a lot of slaves. They had to assemble at times where their masters would let them get together. So there were a lot of issues. The church in Philippi, that was started in a jail. Paul was, first he was out at the stream with those who were praying, and so then he's in jail, and the Philippian jailer studies with Paul while he's in jail. This is something good that happened out of slavery. In 1 Corinthians chapter 9:27, Paul tells us that we're supposed to buffet our body and make it our slave. I remember Mr. Eisnagel in Ghana was teaching us a lesson at one family camp, and he said, everybody gets to be a slave owner. Everybody gets to own a slave, and it's our bodies, and we have to make our bodies subject to us. We tell our body to go here, and it's supposed to go there. If we tell our body to get out of bed, it's supposed to do that with a good attitude most of the time. But over and over, we see Paul reminding the churches, the early churches, that we need to realize that we are no longer slaves to our flesh. I've memorized 1 and 2 Peter, and I really like in chapter 2 of 2 Peter, verse 19, Peter's warning to the brethren that by what a man is overcome, by this he is enslaved. And we need to have the attitude that nothing is going to master me. Nothing is going to be my God other than God. We're not going to be subjected to the desires of our flesh, but we are going to submit ourselves completely to the Lord Jesus Christ and what he wants for us. A couple more verses and then we'll get into the nitty-gritty. Someone please read Romans chapter 6, verse 16. And go ahead to verse 22. 6, 16 through 22. Okay, so we are plagued in a society where people all around us are vying for our affections, for our attentions. The world is trying to enslave us. I have a few women's magazines that Jackson was supposed to put in our bag, and it's in my car back in Indianapolis Airport, parked. They were free from the public library, and one was called Traditional Home, and one was Architectural Digest, and just a couple of other really nice magazines that women like to look through and sometimes lust over because of the fancy, elegant decorated houses, and but that's not here, so maybe that was good. If you've ever watched, there's a movie called Amistad. Anyone ever seen that? This is a really good portrayal of what slavery is like, shipping slaves from the West Coast to the New World. And the picture of these, I guess the most poignant reminder to me was when they just swept a few slaves overboard because they were dead or sick, so they just kind of pushed them over the deck into the ocean, still chained together. And there was, you know, there was no honor or respect for that human life. I mean, it was just gone. And we need to recognize that if we don't divest ourselves of things that are chaining us up, locking us down to this world, then we're going to be, you know, swept away just like those slaves, because our lives are not going to be fit vessels for our master. I'm bringing up all the Civil War stuff and the slavery things because a lot of times when I'm talking with people, they'll say, well, you know, that was Jesus's day, or, you know, that was back then, and, you know, the culture wasn't so strong, or it wasn't so hard to be a Christian, or things weren't as difficult. But I really like movies like Amistad or The Passion because they are visual reminders that help us with our imaginations to think about details about how we should give up ourselves. You know, sometimes we get so involved in ourselves and involved in our world that, you know, we don't betray Jesus to those who are lost. We have our schedules, we have our agendas, but Jesus had an agenda. He went to sleep in the boat, and what happened? There was a storm, and he had to do something about it. Or Jesus was hungry, and he went to eat, but there was a crowd waiting for him to minister to them. So what did he do? He ministered to them. And we need to see that his example here, Matthew chapter 8, it says, foxes have holes, birds have nests, but I have nowhere. And we need to have that attitude more and more in our lives. So what I want to challenge us today, looking at a few other scriptures, is we need to evaluate our lifestyle. Because America, I've traveled many places in the world, and America is the richest nation on earth. I've been to India. Did any of you ever watch the movie Slumdog Millionaire? Well, that's life in India. That's not just a, you know, fanciful movie about some kids, but that's life. That's life for many in India. And I don't know, they have movies off and on about villages in Africa. And for the most part, Africa is a difficult place to live. If any of you saw our video this past Wednesday night, you know, you see the mud huts and the kids half-dressed and the sores and the distended belly from malnutrition. And that's a reality that we as a church need to face and realize what is our responsibility in this. We can't just say, well, just like the Civil War, just like slavery, you know, it's out of sight, out of mind. It needs to be something that we are faced with and that we need to evaluate. So in Titus chapter 2, and this is why I'm speaking to the older women, because we older women are supposed to be, let's see, have a volunteer to read 3 through 5 and then 11 through 13. And 11 through 13.
while we wait for the blessed hope that the glorious appearing of our great God and Savior, Jesus Christ.
Okay. I love this, and I read this very frequently because I see this not as an if you'd like to, older women, but older women, this is how you are to be. And we older women are supposed to be good guards and guides and givers to those who are younger than us, who are looking to us for an example. We have had more years of experience, and with experience we should have wisdom, knowledge that we have built up over the years. We should be able to teach the younger women how to love their husbands. When the younger women in the congregation come and say, you know, this is happening and da da da, and how do I do it? We should say, well, let me tell you what I did that worked. We should be able to use the wisdom that we are amassing to teach the younger women how to love their husbands, how to love their children. If you love your children, you're going to do this. If you want your children to grow up and be godly, this is how you're going to raise them. So these are some lessons that we as younger, as older women must have learned in our maturing as Christians. We're supposed to be sensible. Self-controlled, is that what your version said? Self-controlled? We're not supposed to have outbursts of anger and irrational behavior, but we are supposed to be able to control our emotions, control ourselves so that we can teach and help others. We're to be workers at home. Workers. We're not supposed to be just at home, but we're supposed to be workers. By the time we're 31 and over, we should pretty much have, you know, a set routine for our day. All major corporations will be able to tell you that they're effective workers are those who have a schedule, and they clock in at this time, and at this time they do this, and I mean, Anna, in hospital work, you know, you don't do one procedure checking a patient before you do another. You do it in an order, and in that way you're able to be more effective in your ministry. And we need to learn how to be workers at home that can work, that can, and not have mountains of laundry here and sinkfuls of dirty dishes there and clutters stuffed under the bed so that we're ineffective. We need to learn organization. That's something that by now we should have down pretty well, and we should be able to say, okay, you know, anybody comes to me and says, where is the duct tape? I'll say, well, it's on the third shelf behind the storm door, and that's where it is. That's where I keep it. And where's this? Where's that? And I'll be able to pull things out quickly because I hate looking for things. I hate looking for keys. I don't like looking for cards. It's a waste of time. I want to have things organized. So this is something that we older women should be able to, you know, go into the younger women who are just learning how to take care of homes and husbands and children and say, let me give you some ideas on organizing. You know, I'd like to share with you something that I've learned that has helped me be more effective in my life so that I'm able to accomplish much. We're supposed to be kind. We're supposed to be subject to our husbands. He goes on in verses 11 through 13, we're supposed to deny ungodliness and worldly desires. We're supposed to be able to control our appetite. We're supposed to be able to have impulse control. Just because we see a new pair of shoes that'll go great with this outfit doesn't mean that we need the new pair of shoes to go great with this outfit. I'm telling you practically, I have had 4 outfits for 3 months. I've had 1 pair of shoes. That's okay. You know, you wash after 3 days, and then you're wearing your 4th outfit, so you wash every 3 days. And you know, hey, I like it. I don't like to have to decide, okay, what shoes are going to fit with this outfit so that I'm a knockout. You know, we should be beyond that. We're beyond that. And we need to explain that to the younger women and live like that with the younger women. If they see us constantly, oh, you know, oh, I really like that new fashion, and now I've got to find the perfect shoes to go with it, and oh, don't you think this bag will match? I mean, we need to be beyond that, and we need to be living that example so the younger women are also encouraged by our example. And we can go past the physical dressing to the house. You know, we don't have to have the matching armchair to go with the sofa and the, you know, we don't have to have those things in order to live godly, effective lives on this earth. And if you come to Ghana, you'll see quite an eclectic collection of sofas and chairs in my living room, and they sit great. They're comfortable, and we have a house full of people every Friday night, and everybody has a place to relax. And it doesn't matter that one is a bright red because I really like red, and the other is a brown because that was what was at the yard sale, and the other one is an interesting plaid. You know, it doesn't matter. What matters is that we're teaching our children that those things are not important. And we need to put this into practice, because America's in trouble, and it's in trouble because, you know, there's been a lot of worldly desires, people after worldly desires, ungodliness, things that are not, we have no self-control. As a nation, we have no self-control. So we need to get beyond that. Let's look also in 1 Timothy. Chapter 6, verse 6 through 19. We'll not read all of that. Godliness, 1 Timothy chapter 6, verse 6. Godliness actually is a means of great gain when accompanied by contentment. For we brought nothing into the world, so we cannot take anything out of it either. And if we have food and covering, with these we shall be content. But those who want to get rich fall into temptation and a snare and many foolish and harmful desires, which plunge men into ruin and destruction. For the love of money is a root of all sorts of evil, and some by longing for it have wandered away from the faith and pierced themselves with many a pang. The great gain here that we read about is a peace. When we are content with what God blesses us with, then we have a peace that the world can't understand. And I've joked with a few people about my red convertible, because the joke between my husband and I is that, you know, when he dies, I'm going to have a red convertible, and I'm going to have a house on the beach by my brother, because he's going to die when he's 100, and I have to live to 100, so I'm going to have a year and a half that I'm going to live on the beach because that's my favorite place in the world, and I'm going to have a red convertible because red's my favorite. Well, this is my red convertible that God's given me, and I think it's an interesting lesson. But we've been married 28 years, and of that 28 years, we've owned two vehicles for a total of 3 years. One time we had a minivan that lasted about a second hand, it lasted about a year and a half, and then we had a horrible red station wagon that we bought from some trusted Irishman that, but you know, it's better not to have two cars if you're going to have a monster like that. So, you know, I'm content. We have a big, huge 15-passenger van, and all the missionary ladies in Kumasi go grocery shopping one day of the month. We all load into the van, and all five of us go grocery shopping for about 3 hours. We load the van up, and we're done for the month. And I love it. I don't have to go back to the store, you know, twice more in the week or another. Hey, that's great. That's something we can teach, you know, our younger women. We can say, you know, go to Costco, load up on all the toilet paper you need for the month, or, you know, do your monthly shopping. And so this is something that I'm able to put into practice with the young ladies who are letting me disciple them in Ghana. And it's neat. It's neat. So here in 1 Timothy 6, we need to be content with food and covering. Everybody here has clothes on. Everybody has eaten today, right? Is anyone? If you're fasting, don't raise your hand because I don't want to know. Well, does anyone in here wonder if they're going to eat tomorrow? Is anyone really concerned whether we'll eat tomorrow? No. Has anyone ever had a month where you were only able to eat one meal a day? Any in here? Yeah. It rarely happens in America, the land of plenty, but it happens on a daily basis in Ghana. In the dry season, several congregations up north, they eat one meal a day. Some of them are really muscular looking and strong and probably won't have the same high cholesterol problems that some of us might wrestle with and some of the other health issues. But we need to realize how blessed we are when we don't have to worry, you know, God, am I going to eat tomorrow? Or God, am I going to have clothes to wear tomorrow? We need to realize that with food and covering, we need to be content. And I had a friend in Bible college, and he was a songwriter, and he wrote a song about a hearse pulling a U-Haul. And it was a really cute song because you don't really see hearse pulling U-Hauls to the seminary. You can't take what you accumulate on earth with you. It's just going to rust. And then I wanted to look down at 17 through 19 because, like it or not, in a world where more than half of the population makes $2 a day, we're rich. No one here makes less than $2 a day, right? A day. I'm not saying an hour. Does anyone here make less than $2 a day? No. No. Okay. We are rich. Someone please read verse 17 through 19. I'm a missionary, so okay, I have to do this missionary thing.
Instruct those who are rich in this present world not to be conceited or to fix their hope on the uncertainty of riches, but on God, who richly supplies us with all things to enjoy. Instruct them to do good, to be rich in good works, to be generous and ready to share, storing up for themselves the treasure of a good foundation for the future, so that they may take hold of that which is life indeed.
We don't need to have the attitude that many whom I've met have. Well, I work hard and I have a good job. So if I want to have blank, then that's okay because I work hard. Well, I'm going to tell you, ladies, I work hard too. And any of you who would like to come and work in our school in Ghana as a teacher, we're too short this year. And we will work side by side. And you will agree when you leave that we work hard in Ghana. Okay? You're working hard in a land that our forefathers worked hard for. Our grandfathers, like Mr. Hofstetter's grandpa, worked on a farm. He was 80 years old, still pulling a tractor and plowing. And we are reaping the benefits of those hardworking patriarchs who plowed the land and planted, and we're benefiting from it. We need to realize that God has blessed us for a reason. And if we don't realize our purpose, the purpose that God has blessed us for, then we're going to lose the blessings that God has given us. So we're told here in 1 Timothy 6 that we are supposed to instruct those who are rich in this present world, not to be conceited or fix their hope on the uncertainty of riches, but on God. We're supposed to instruct them to do good, to be rich in good works, to be generous, ready to share, so that you store up for yourself a treasure of a good foundation. When I memorized the book of Mark, one thing I really liked was the parable of the sower, because at that time we were dealing with a lady in the congregation who was trying to amass riches in Ghana, which is really hard, for her family, a microwave, a dishwasher, a washing machine. She was after those physical things, and they've left the church consequently because, you know, they didn't want to put their daughter in the Christian school. They wanted her in a private school where she would have opportunity to get a better education. Well, Jeremiah graduated top of 1,500 students and second in the 5,000 students. So I don't think our Christian school is doing such a bad job educating. But that was her picture. So, you know, I've seen someone who was very close to me leave the church because they were pursuing the worldly things. And the weeds, the thorns, we need to pull them out. Anything that we see that might be a stumbling block to us, or maybe not just to us, but to those who see us, to those who are watching to evaluate our lives. James is full of instruction for the rich man. He says in chapter 1, verse 11, that the rich man in his pursuits will fade away. Ladies, I don't want you to fade away. I want you to be in heaven. I want to be able to look out when I get into the gates and see your faces there. I want us all to pursue heaven together. It's disheartening, heartbreaking to come back to America year after year and see, well, one has gone, you know, this way and one has gone that way because they're pursuing the things of the world rather than the things of the Spirit. And I want to tell you, a lot of the fault is on us because we feed their desires by our remarks. Just an example that Rebecca shared with me recently, because she's trying to raise her children to, you know, she's trying to raise Anastasia and Hadassah. They're going to grow up to be mommies. That's what Anastasia will tell you if they're in India. I'm going to grow up to be a mommy. Well, she was watching Sesame Street with Rebecca's supervision 2 weeks ago. And they were talking about different jobs. And after the Sesame Street, Rebecca said, "So Anastasia, what do you want to grow up to be?" And she said, "A postman," because that was one of the options. And Rebecca says, "No, you want to grow up to be a mommy. Remember, you've always talked about wanting to grow up to be a mommy." And that's how quickly and how easily these ideas can get planted in these little kids' minds that, you know, being a mother, keeping your home, taking care of your children, your husband, is not that important. You know, let's do something special. Let's do something exciting with our lives. Let's find something that will give us fulfillment. But I can tell you the most fulfilling thing that I've done ever in my life is to train up my children. And they're a great blessing to me. All three of them are, you know, so encouraging to know that, well, my daughter's working with the young ladies now, and my son's working with the young men, and Jessica just helped run camp in Ghana, and it's rewarding to know that your children are all involved actively in putting these things into practice so that there will be great contentment among themselves. Let's look at James a little bit. Let's see, who's memorized James here? I know, Gail's memorized James. I heard you quoting it. James chapter 1:11. "The sun rises with a scorching wind, withers the grass, and its flower falls off, and the beauty of its appearance is destroyed. So too the rich man will fade away." Chapter 1, verse 12. "Blessed is the man who perseveres under trial." It doesn't say here that we are blessed when we persevere when things go right, when, you know, you flip the switch and the lights come on, or you turn the tap and the water comes out, or you go to the grocery store and get everything you need at one time, or when you have enough money to get everything you need at one time, or when the kids are all healthy, or when your husband is satisfied with the food you prepared. That's not what James tells us here. He said, "Blessed is the one who perseveres under trial." If we are not going through some kind of trial personally in our lives, whether it be overcoming something that we've struggled with for years or months, or whether memorizing a book of the Bible, or whether learning a new skill, if we are not persevering under these difficult times, we're not proving to those who see us to be a good example of a Christian. We're supposed to lay aside the weights, the encumbrances, get rid of the handcuffs, and we're supposed to run. And this is something that we keep running until we die and go to glory. It's not something that I've arrived and now I can stop. So chapter 2, verse 15, James says, "If a brother or sister is without clothing and in need of food, and one of you says to them, 'Go in peace, be warm, to be filled,' and yet you do not give them what is necessary for their body, what use is that?" We are supposed to be ambassadors to Christ to those in our neighborhoods. I'm sure, especially during this time where the economy is tightened, there have to be ways that we can reach out to those in our communities, to our next-door neighbors, to people around us, and show them that we're concerned about not only their physical well-being, but their spiritual well-being. And it's great to see, you know, the church rise up to what God expects us to do in trials and in difficult situations and portray His love to those who are around us, to those who haven't had a job for 2 weeks and don't have ability to get what they need for their families. So we need to look for opportunities. God has given us a time right now where we can look for opportunities to bless and encourage those around us. In chapter 4, verse 1, James says, "What is the source of quarrels and conflicts among you? Is it not the source of, is not the source of your pleasures that wage war in your members?" A few years ago, probably 16 years ago, I just stopped getting all kinds of women's magazines. I used to like to get like Family Circle and Women's Day. And my mom gets me one every year for my Christmas. She gets me a renewal to Country Woman. And that's the only one I get. And I like that one because it's got recipes in it and some neat crafts to make on free time. But so many, I saw that so many of those magazines just entrap, especially younger women. They advertisers are really, I mean, they're paid a lot of money to entrap people and to inflame their desires. You know, oh, you know, man, if I only had that 20 set knife block, then I could cut anything I need to in my kitchen like a pro and do it so quickly. And I'm thinking, you only have two hands. How will you use 20 knives in your kitchen, you know? I have about 10, but many dull ones. But not, I mean, not picking on any one thing, but, you know, we are so easily sucked into this, you know, oh, look, that is the really neatest thing. I have to have an iPod so that I can communicate more easily and do so much more work here on this little gadget than elsewise. And oh, I have to have high-speed internet so that I can, you know, look at everybody's Facebook page in 10 minutes instead of half an hour. Well, you know, you could just call them and have the free minutes with somebody on another Verizon or whatever. I don't know. I'm not that savvy on it. I used to, Zanna got something for Kaziah, and they were able to talk for free on the cell phone. But, you know, we need to think of ways that we can be less demanding of our husbands, less demanding of the Lord's resources. Think of ways that we can be resourceful so that we do have to share with those who are in need. Because I'm telling you, there is a world out there waiting for us to be different. We are in the world, but not of it. We're not supposed to dress like the world and talk like the world and live like the world. We're supposed to be different. And it's only when the world can see our difference that they're going to come to us and say, hey, you know, I see what you're doing and this is great. And it's sad to me when the pagans, you know, are seeing, you know, things. My hometown paper did an article about my family. And I had so many people from the community speak to me in the library or the grocery store. And, like, what you're doing is great. And is there any way we can get involved and stuff like that? And then the saints, you know, seem to have, okay, great. You know, you do your thing. I'll do my thing. There'll be peace. And we'll pray for each other, and you're so special, I could never do what you do, and on and on. But we need to realize that we all have been given responsibility by God, and we need to take it. James goes on to say, you lust and do not have, you commit murder. Well, we can commit murder by cutting somebody else down, tearing down their reputation, or, you know, somebody would say, well, did you see so-and-so's new, I'm going to say speedboat. Yeah, but do you know what they did to get that? Have you ever seen how this happened? And I mean, not that any of us have speedboats, but I don't want to pick on houses or cars or whatever, because I don't want you to think I'm talking about you individually. But he says we're envious and we can't obtain, so we fight and quarrel. We don't have because we ask We ask and don't receive because we ask with wrong motives so that we may spend it on our pleasures. Here again, the word pleasure is mentioned. We need to make sure that, like Mr. Husser said in his sermon when he was talking with Brittany, it's not all about us. It's not all about us. It's all about helping somebody else get to heaven. We've been asked recently by one of the leaders in a congregation back east, and I don't want to mention any names, to take another 14-year-old into our house. And Mr. Hassan and I have been praying about this because when we got married, I was 19, he was 20. We had the picture that we'd have, you know, six kids and get done with raising our kids, and then we'd have, you know, our more mature years to do some fun things together. Well, that's blasted out of the water. But we only had three because that's all God wanted me to have, and he wouldn't let me have any more. That's good because we've been able to open our home to others, like Jackson. In December, he will have lived with us 5 years. And Alima, she's been with us almost 6 years. And, I mean, I wish you could meet Alima. She's a gem. And we've been able to help Susanna with Keziah. Well, there's this other girl, 14 years old, back in Ohio, and this lady says, "Do you guys think you might be able to help us out here?" And it's like, okay, well, we want to meet the parents and find out the issues. And she says, well, she's sexually active. She lies. She steals. She sneaks out at night. She's not violent, but, you know, she's losing her gleam, her glimmer. And she's dulling her conscience. And we're afraid that, you know, if she keeps on this path, then she's going to be lost. So Mr. Hauser and I talked about it. And okay. But we were thinking that, you know, in just a couple more years, we'll have our peaceful, normal household back. You know, peace, contentment, normal. But we talked about it, and he and I both came to the conclusion that we would rather have chaos and turmoil and a lot of sleepless nights and a lot of long porch talks and issues like that, and save this girl who has no other hope, no other chance, than to have our peaceful, happy little family unit that everybody's organized, everybody's on schedule, everybody's doing everything on plan. So I'm just putting that out to you as a challenge, because I know there are people in your communities who are hurting and who need help. They need help. For you, you're going to have to spend time. You're going to spend energy, sleepless nights, some money to minister to them and help them. Like Mr. Husser said last night, there's never been a time in this nation's history where there were more women employed than men. That's going to leave a lot of messy family situations, a lot of kids with anger issues, a lot of kids hurting because they weren't nurtured and they weren't trained right when they were young. And we're going to have to step up, and we're going to have to make sure we're older women and we've got things in order and lined up so that we have energy and wisdom to work with these people. And we need to be looking for people. We need to be looking for people that we can minister to. Almost done in Ephesians chapter 5, verses 1 and 2. Remember, I mentioned that a lot of us think, well, you know, Jesus, that was 2,000 years ago. It's a different culture, a different time. Paul here writes to the church in Ephesus that we're to be imitators of God. We're supposed to walk in love. It's Christ loved us and gave himself up for us, an offering and a sacrifice to God as a fragrant aroma. That means we're not going to have the same free time that we had before. We're not going to have the same spending ability that we had before. We're going to have to sacrifice those things. We're going to have to sacrifice our comforts and offer ourselves. Offer as a sacrifice. Sacrifices have to be something that's painful, that hurts. I know when the animal was killed on the altar, you know, there was usually bleeding of the sheep, or the goats made some struggle or some noise. It wasn't something that they just laid down there and said, here I am, cut my head off. So we need to sacrifice. And remember I said that the church in Philippi, Paul had a special relationship. I mean, Peter had a special relationship with them because he was imprisoned. And the church began because he was willing to preach while he was imprisoned, while he was working with the Philippian jailer. And we see great things from the church of Philippi in Paul's letters to them. So I'm giving this as a challenge to each of us who are more mature, who have more wisdom. Think about ways that we can work right now to train the younger women, to encourage the younger women in the congregation, in the home, those who are our daughters, those who, you know, right now these little girls need to be learning that your beauty doesn't come from having a matching dress and hairband and shoes, but it comes from your inside, from what's inside. Our daughters, whenever they'd put on a new dress and come and twirl it, they liked the kind that could twirl. That was the best dress in the world, if it could twirl and come all the way out like this. And Jeff would always say, well, do you have on your jewelry? And they'd say, yeah. And he, you know, this is their jewelry. Did they smile? That's what he wanted to see. He didn't care what they were wearing, but did they have their happy face? Were they showing that they were, you know, beautiful from inside? We need to make sure that, you know, we're willing to train these young people that God has blessed us with, to train them that, you know, do we really need this? Is this something that's going to make an impact? Sometimes it is. Sometimes we need, one time Mr. Hussiter and I were having a discussion about whether we needed a refrigerator. And I said, okay, well, we have 14 people in the house, and I cannot go and buy fresh food every day to cook for them because it would take hours, you know, go over here and buy meat and go over here and buy vegetables and prepare fresh every day. I said, if I don't have a freezer, then I can't do my job. So you make a solution for it. I'll do the best I can, but I can't operate. So sometimes we need things in order to do our jobs and to minister. But we need to make sure that we always evaluate. We don't need the newest and the biggest and the brightest and the boldest. We need to learn to be content. We need to learn to be content wearing 4 outfits for 3 months. You know, now it's getting cooler, so I can't do my sleeveless as much. I'm going back to Africa in 9 days. There I'll be wearing the same 4 outfits that I brought with me. Okay, thank you for listening. Any comments, any questions? I hope to have encouraged you to think about ways that you can learn to be frugal and so that you have more opportunities to bless other people. Any comments? Any questions? Any challenges? I have handcuffs here. Yes.
Where's the ways that you
Well, I think that needs to be communicated ideally when they're younger. If I can just say from working with Keziah, I tell her every day that she's beautiful when she smiles. And Mr. Hossiter does. I think it's really important by that time for their fathers to be affirming that he thinks they're great, that he thinks they're beautiful. Because the girls get a lot of confidence, self-confidence from their fathers communicating to that to them. Just to reaffirm to them that, you know, it's not the clothes that makes the woman, it's the woman that makes the clothes. Comments like that. And, you know, show it by your own self. I mean, I know that if you're constantly concerned about, oh no, you know, these shoes aren't going to match with this outfit and it's going to mess up my whole plan for my wardrobe, or Or, I can't find the perfect bracelet. Has anybody seen my bracelet? As you're rushing out the door to assembly, I know that's going to communicate to them, though not directly. They're going to say, okay, it's really important that I have this, 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 and this, because this is what my mom thinks is important. And I think if, you know, indirectly, if we're raising our daughters that way, that's going to speak louder than I think you're beautiful and those comments that you'll make later when they're older. So it's like it's something that we need to be doing with the younger children now. You know, because the advertisers work on the young children probably more than the older ladies, you know. Advertisements in magazines or TV, you know, really try to entice these children. And, you know, some of the things that I see as a waste, you know, it used to be PlayStations and Nintendos and computer video games and on, you know, ways to entertain children. You know, why don't mothers and grandmothers take their children and say, you know, we're going to bake some cookies and take them to this neighbor who lost their job. Or let's make some bread and go over and see this person who's been in the hospital. Why can't we as mothers, you know, rally up enough enthusiasm within ourselves to pass it on to our children so that they grow up and it's natural for them to want to do good? We're making it harder on our children by providing them with everything that they ever saw in a TV advertisement and wanted, you know? So we need to make it easier on them to learn to do good deeds. Yes. And it's happening in Ghana because American television, you can get cable TV there. We don't get it, but you can get it there. And, you know, so you're sending your culture over to Ghana, and now we're going to have to deal with it because the American consumer, you know, is, you know, America's the place. Anybody would take a visa to America if they could get one. So, yes.
Sherry, you were talking about a young lady.
Mm-hmm.
To be a wife.
Mm-hmm.
How is she now? Has she become a Christian?
She's been immersed. We bought her back. We gave the husband 2 cows and some sheep, and she's free from him. That's one of the things that the money from the churches in the States helped us do. Because, she was kicked out. She was beaten, and, you know.
How old is she? And what?
She's 33 now. Yeah, she's in the church.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So she doesn't have her children because in that culture, once you bear children, if the man has given the cows and the sheep, once you bear children, they belong to his family. So she doesn't have the children, but she has freedom. He has another wife. And so.
So in her case, even though he kicked her out, she still belongs to him?
No, she's legally free from him because we gave her his family cows and sheep.
But if he kicks her out and he doesn't receive anything for her, she still belongs to him?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So she's not.
No. He's free to do with her whatever. I mean, he can beat her if he wants to.
Continually from any time forward.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So. Those are issues we don't have to deal with here as much as we do there. No, it's forever. When it's time for the daughter to marry, his family will find a husband for her, and they'll do the same thing. And if it's the third wife of a Muslim, it'll be the third wife of a Muslim. The sons will be paid. They will receive cows for a woman to get a woman. So. That's one of the reasons we have Alima with us, Abby's sister, because her uncle was ready to marry her off as the fourth wife of an old 50-year-old Muslim man when she was 13. So we're keeping her. And they'll have to fight us to get her back. So. Okay, thank you for your comments.